For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Ezgi Sarıtaş from Ankara, Turkey. Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York and KPFA in Berkeley, and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Kata Mesa and Simba Russo. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. Our DC editor is Mitch Jeserich. The technical production team is Jade Paget-Seekins, Pauline Bartolone, Mick Million and Lindsay Benedict. FSRN is a worker-run collective. And for more information, visit our website at www.fsrn.org. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
And you're listening to WBAI Radio in New York. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. For Billy Bones was the best effect for words. I hope that's understood. From Billy Bones.
And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. We're here with you on this Tuesday evening, as we are every Tuesday evening, from 7 to 8, speaking about technology and events of the world, taking your phone calls, various things like that. And I've got some exciting news here, which I don't know if anybody else noticed. Any of you subscribed to the Merriam-Webster Word of the Day?
No.
No? Well, you should. You know, it's a good way to learn lots of the words.
We do that at the library at school.
We do.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then you know that the word of the day for October 4th was freaker. That's right. P-H-R-E-A-K-E-R. One who gains illegal access to the telephone system is the definition Merriam-Webster gave. Example sentence. The company has modified its phone system in order to ward off freakers. Did you know freakers are modern-day troublemakers who specialize in attacks on the telephone system? The word, which became popular in the mid-1980s, is probably a combination of the words phone and freak with an F. Freakers, that's with a PH, are also known as freaks or phone freaks. A freaker can use either low-tech means, such as whistling or using an instrument, to mimic the tones the phone system utilizes to route calls and identify payment, or the more high-tech tactic of breaking into and manipulating the phone company's computer system. Their purpose is often to make long-distance or other expensive calls without paying. Although some freakers seem more interested in causing damage or havoc simply for the sake of doing so. Well, gee whiz. I didn't know about those freakers, did you?
No. Is the term criminal used in the definition at all?
They didn't say that anywhere.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It is illegal, but it's...
Yeah. But, well, Merriam-Webster used the word freaker. They didn't use it properly, I don't think, but it's interesting that that's now even in the dictionary. And that was the word of the day for October 4th. We received several pieces of information. It's great. Whenever anything happens in the world, people tell us. And I love that about the internet. You know, we can just... Somebody somewhere can say something about hackers, freakers, whatever, and we'll find out about it. So don't think you can get away with it if you're thinking of saying something. And our email address, by the way, in case you do want to tell us something or rat on somebody, is oth@2600.com.
We also have a physical mail address, but I don't know it.
Oh, I do. It's off the hook care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 100005.
I think you threw in a
Did I do that again? Yeah. Okay. Well, it should be five digits with a one and a five on either end.
Which means three zeros in the second. Exactly. Not the number three anywhere, just a zero, a zero.
It adds up
zero.
To the same either way, though. So
it adds up
matter.
To six, but that doesn't count, and it screws with the Postal Service's head.
We got a lot of mail about the GPS tracking thing, especially with the Coke cans. I thought that was pretty interesting right there. In fact, someone even sent us a little web page.
The Australian site?
That's the Australian site, yeah. Purchase a specially marked bottle of 600 milliliter, 1.25 liter, 1.5 liter. Why does someone get a 1.25 liter versus a 1.5 liter? Someone goes out to the store and says, you know, I don't need the 1.5 liters. I'm just going to go for the 1.25 today.
They're shaped differently.
So? What difference does it make when you're drinking it that's shaped differently?
If you get a 6 or an 8
stored
pack?
In different sort of backpack things for bottles.
It's not a 6-pack or an 8-pack. It's a bottle. 1.25 liter or 1.5 liter.
Right.
And then there's 2 liter. So, if you buy a 600 milliliter, 1.25 liter, 1.5 liter, or 2 liter bottle of Coca-Cola or Diet Coke between October 5th and November 28th of this year, open the bottle and look under the cap. If you find the word winner printed on the cap liner, follow the instructions provided to activate your winning Thrill Seeker bottle. So you have to do something to activate the bottle. once activated, I mean, you know, I don't even understand why they need to track you down if you know you're a winner. But once activated, we'll be able to find you using the latest satellite technology so our Thrill Seeker squad can deliver your prize package to you within hours, subject to your location. There's a big asterisk next to that. Subject to satellite reception.
Now, this is Australia only.
That's right.
Yeah, I imagine if the bottle shows up in New York or something like that, they'll have a tough time tracking you down. Find Try Again, and you're eligible to enter the unclaimed prize draw. So, I guess, you know, if you open the thing up, then you must see the whatever is in there that the GPS locating equipment or whatever is in there. And it doesn't say anything here about there not being liquid inside. So I would imagine there would be something.
If you read the fine print, it says that when they come with their prize, they will also bring you a bottle of Coke to replace the one that was a GPS device instead.
It says, where does it say that? I'm looking at the fine print.
If you click some button on the website.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I have a piece of paper here, so I can't click it, unfortunately.
But aren't you glad now, too? You know how to describe your thirst. You either have a 1.5 liter thirst or a 1.25 liter thirst.
Yeah, it's really something. I don't understand. You know, the metric system has never taken off in this country. That's one thing I'll never understand. But 2-liter bottles, that's something that we've embraced. You know, that's okay. We can do 2-liter bottles, but we can't do centimeters or kilometers. Oh, my God, it's too complicated. But and 1-liter bottles, too, I believe, have taken off. Yeah, so it's not so hard if you really think about it. Anyway, so people who do this can win all kinds of things like Peugeots and $10,000 and things like that.
Activate your Thrill Seeker bottle.
Now, this person wrote in asking, I'm listening to Off the Hook, was wondering about the Coke cans that will be tracked by GPS. For these cans to be picked up by satellites, wouldn't it be necessary for them to give off some kind of radio signal? Wouldn't it therefore be possible to build a device that would pick up such signals? I'd love to see any technical information available on the system that's being used and go war scanning in the soda aisles of my local supermarkets. Just an idea from Barcode.
Well, that's a project for your term paper, boys and girls.
I think it would be pretty easy to find the can that has the special equipment using some kind of device.
They mentioned right on the web page that you would contact them and they would tell you how to activate your device. So obviously it's not activated on the shelf. Otherwise, yes. It would be very easy to detect.
That is true. But then you have to ask yourself, what's the point of the device if you have to contact them anyway? You could just contact them and say, I'm the winner. Forget about tracking me down. I'll come to you.
Well, it's true.
It just seems pretty simple to me. Mm-hmm. I think they're just trying to, boast about their GPS technology. Which
no, these are bottles, not cans. So the
that's right. They are
so
bottles.
The fancy detection equipment you need would be like a metal detector.
Uh-huh. Right? You could also see inside the bottle.
Well, that's not necessarily. True. Coke is kind of dark.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What if you got Crystal Coke or whatever?
They probably don't have the thing in there. And I think they ended that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to even suggest that.
Wouldn't there be a weight difference?
Yes, sorry. What's that?
Wouldn't there be a weight difference between the GPS Coke and the normal Coke?
We don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, you can go down to Australia with a scale and walk down the supermarket aisles until somebody tells you to leave, and maybe, you know, we can win $10,000 in a Peugeot that way. Who knows? But continuing with GPS, Japan is having some interesting developments with GPS. Stunned by the kidnapping of a teenage girl, a rural Japanese city plans to use a satellite-linked tracking system to help parents find their children. You know, always think about the children. You have to have these things. You have to give up your rights and privacy and all that to protect children. The northern city of Murakami has asked two security companies to provide the service for the families of 2,700 elementary and junior high school students. The abduction of a 15-year-old girl last month prompted the program. A 26-year-old man took the teenager to his home on a nearby island, where she was rescued 11 days later. Okay. With the new service, students will carry devices that will send out signals allowing their parents to pinpoint where they are through a website on the Internet. They will use a combination of technologies provided by mobile phone companies and the Global Positioning System, a U.S. satellite navigation service used by everyone, from hikers to ship captains and Coca-Cola. The device also will be equipped with a button that can be pushed to call for help. If you're in a big city, people will come to help if you call for help. But here, students walk to school in the mountains and rice fields. We need the latest device. The city will pay a small part of the fee for the device. An anti-crime buzzer, not linked to a security service, will also be offered. Look for this kind of thing to be in existence everywhere.
I want to point out Japan has had a device for this sort of problem for 1,000 years. It's called a katana. It's a little sword. You'd like somebody grabs you, you like cut them.
And all Japanese people carry this.
They should. If they're going to go as outlandish
maybe
as
maybe a few have just gotten the desire to carry one now.
Well, yeah.
They've had this kind of service and thing available for parents to put in their cars so that if you loan the car to the kid, you could actually go on the Internet to a website and track and say, oh, you went to the library?
Yeah.
Well, according to the map, you were here, 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 and here, nowhere near the library.
I saw an ad for that, in fact, and a little cartoon thing said, why is Junior crossing the state line? It's after curfew and all kinds of things like that. So, look for interesting things with GPS. It really, really is going to be the technology of the future as far as abuse and invasion of privacy and that kind of a thing. So we have to learn as much as we can about that. Electronic Frontier Foundation issued a release this week warning of privacy concerns in the use of radio frequency identification tagging of, guess what, library books. Yeah, the San Francisco Public Library Commission, SFPLC, is considering a budget for RFID technology for the library system starting in 2004, with implementation starting 2005. Under the plan, San Francisco libraries would place a computerized chip in library books and other materials to facilitate tracking of the books through the library system, as well as on loans to patrons. Library staff, as well as potentially other persons, could use RFID sensor devices to determine the location, title, and potentially other information about the library materials. And this is a quote. RFID technology raises great privacy concerns because insecure RFID tags permit inventorying of people's possessions and tracking of people via their possessions. That's according to EFF senior staff attorney Lee Tien. Libraries have long been very protective of library patron privacy, given that surveillance of reading and borrowing records chills the exercise of First Amendment rights. EFF is recommending that the SFPLC postpone adoption of RFID technology pending further study. The question I have is this RFID technology, you pretty much have to go past something that is looking for it to know that you have it. That's what we were talking about last week, correct?
Mm-hmm. And how hard is that to set up?
Well, I don't know. I guess somebody could come by your house with an RFID detector and see what it is that you have nearby. But I thought it was something that was a lot, you have to be a lot closer. You have to literally pass by something, like walk through a supermarket checkout aisle or something like that.
They're doing, though, is just matching the tag as you're in the library with the information from your library card.
Well, that's
we know that you have this book. Mm-hmm. And whether it's in your house or not is no big deal, but we know you took this book out, and we know last week you took that book out.
But they know that already, don't they? Libraries already know.
It's not the library that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. But who are they giving the information to?
No. That's not the point. The point is anybody, from a hacker to the FBI to whatever, can make some sort of detection device and set it up. And if somebody goes by with library books, it's like, you're reading Justine by the Marquis de Sade. You know?
Okay, so you're saying...
Or Kitchen Improvised Plastic Explosive.
Set up an Easy Pass type system where you don't know where it is. People walk by, say, 5th Avenue and 59th Street, and you little beeps go off saying what this person is carrying. Okay, now that's something I can understand as far as what the potential threat is. Now, my question, though, is is every RFID system going to have the same signature? For instance, will I be able to track who's carrying, you know, a box of detergent versus who's carrying, you know, a catcher in the rye or something?
In other words, if you just set up a system, you're a hacker, you're the FBI, if you don't have a database to go with it, you just get serial numbers, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I would think that you could probably figure out, after a couple of prohibited by law investigations, like searching somebody who has a few hits, see what they're carrying. You know, eventually you'll find that there's a designator for the public library, and then, gee, let's go infiltrate.
And that's the other thing. Everyone always says what hackers could do. You ever notice in these news stories when something horrible happens, like, oh boy, this company left 10,000 of their credit card numbers on a website with no password. What hackers could have done with that is unbelievable. And, you know, they always turn it to hackers. Not the people who was stupid in the first place, or, you know, who violated your privacy by putting this information on a site, but what the hackers could have done.
I've noticed a slight change in that trend. The Daily News in the past couple of weeks has come across the welfare department in the city of New York throwing out case files with enough stuff to go identity thieving after you go dumpster diving. And the Daily News and the articles has pretty much come down on the welfare department, saying that it's they're to blame for just throwing this stuff out in the street. And they've interviewed people, and they've come down on that. It's not, oh, you know, some crook could find this. No, it's like, how could they throw this stuff out? So at least the attitudes are changing somewhat.
Mish, welcome. Haven't seen you in a while.
In a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Anything to add to all this? So actually, I'm just testing out your microphone, make sure it works. It's not working. No, it's not working. That's what I thought. Try now.
Hello?
No, it's not working at all. All right, maybe somebody can look into that. Yes, Leo. You have,
I was
going to
say that they could still track which books you get anyway, because it's most people do not carry the library books, which they just took out in their bag, but like for weeks at a time. They keep it at home. But if somebody, I believe, has a... every library card has a barcode, and a librarian has their own barcode, which when you input it into the machine, gives you access to the database of who took out which books. So you don't have to have any tracking device or anything. You could still just figure out who took books from where and get the addresses of the address of the person and where they live and the phone number without having any RFID tag up in the book.
Okay, you know, I think your microphone is working. I just can't hear you for some reason, because when you hit the mic just now, I see it on the meters here, but I don't hear it in my head, which is very strange. I've never seen that happen before.
It's probably some button that we don't know
There's
about.
A button that
Speak
prevents me from hearing. This is... Yeah, you see, he's moving over here. Say
he's
that again.
Moving here, too.
We don't hear him in our heads.
Well, the meters here can hear you. I wonder if the listeners can hear you, because that's really what matters, if the listeners can hear. Mike's going to investigate this and hopefully figure it out. See, this is him over here. Hit your microphone again. Oh, what are you pressing? Okay, try now.
Hello?
Thank you very
there
much.
There we go.
Okay, you know, there's a little button there that only exists for the purpose of this happening.
Which button was it?
It's a button that puts it into audition. I don't know why it was like that. Anyway, so yes, welcome to the
Thank
show.
You.
we have all kinds of other pieces of news too, and we're going to be taking phone calls 212-209-2900. Did you hear about the cell phone that exploded?
Yes.
No.
All right. Well, it's important that people know about this. Wireless phones have become a way of life for many people, but one of those phones knocked one woman for a loop over the weekend.
I've never heard that expression before.
Tina McChristian's granddaughter was full of smiles on Monday, but her family had a real scare the day before. Tina says, I really thought my car was on fire because there was that much smoke. She says the smoke was coming from a new cell phone that the family had just purchased 2 days earlier. It was sitting on her daughter's lap as they were driving down the street. Tina said, my daughter screamed, my phone exploded. Pull over. It sizzled. It exploded. There's a mark on my seat. Tina says, when the phone exploded, the battery blew out of the compartment and ended up lodged in the car seat that held Tina's granddaughter. She says the baby could have gotten burned, or what if my daughter had been using the phone? Tina says there was absolutely no warning. The phone was just sitting there. It wasn't being charged or used. Tina is thankful that no one was hurt, but she says she's a little reluctant about putting a phone up to her ear again. She got the phone at Cricket, but they turned her over to Kyocera. I don't know what those companies are. The manufacturer
is the phone manufacturer.
That's the phone manufacturer. Okay. She's waiting to hear back from them about replacement of the phone and possibly the car seat. That's pretty weird. Have you ever heard of a phone exploding?
Well, I think Bernie S. sent a message to the list about how those kinds of batteries that they're using in them...
Lithium batteries.
Yeah. If they're shorted, they can be very dangerous. Anyone's can be very dangerous if it's shorted.
And how do you short one? I'm not saying people should do this. I'm saying I'd like to know how to get shorted so that you don't do this.
Bad wiring.
Really?
I've read that it's...
Sorry. You gotta let me know when you want to talk.
Okay, I've read that there's a... They're very temperature sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So if it goes above a certain temperature, it explodes. Like 80 something degrees is a.
Well, I don't think the person's car was overheating or anything like that. But I don't know. There's something to be careful about. Something else to worry about in case the radiation doesn't get to you, or in case it's unsafe driving as you're talking on the phone while driving doesn't get to you. All right. Couple more news items. Iraq has awarded phone licenses and has rebuffed the United States technology. Remember, we talked about this a few months ago, that Iraq was going to be putting in some new phone system, a new mobile phone system, and they were looking to use companies like Sprint PCS, which uses technology that the rest of the world doesn't use. You know, CDMA is what it's called instead of GSM. We use GSM, some of us use in this country. It enabled me to travel overseas and use my phone overseas with the same phone number, although it cost me a pretty penny. That's something else I'll get into a future date. I have to analyze my phone bill. It's so complicated and crazy, I just can't even understand it, but it's very expensive. Anyway, Iraq awarded licenses on Monday to various firms to set up mobile phone networks, and those companies are GSM companies. So I think that's a very significant thing. And I think it's a good choice, right, to use GSM instead of our stupid technology here, which really doesn't work anywhere else.
I agree.
All right, well, that's the only good news out of Iraq that I've seen in a while. What do you got there?
Did you see the story about the Princeton graduate student who had basically defeated the copy protection for the CD, just hitting the shift key?
I heard about that. Now, what are the details? What do you actually have? What copy protection are we talking about this time?
We're talking about specifically, let's see, the company that did it was MediaMax, CD3 software developed by Suncom Technologies. Could be defeated on computers running the Windows operating system by holding down the shift key, disabling a Windows feature that automatically launches the encryption software on the disk. Now, the thing I get a kick out of is this guy posted this on his website, and no one got upset or charged him with anything.
Uh-huh. Well, it's kind of hard to charge somebody with a crime for posting that you have to hit the shift key. You know?
He defeated
yes.
the encryption system.
Yes.
That's against the DMCA.
It's the exact same thing we did. But
this is my point.
Yeah. You know? No, I know.
I don't want to see him get in trouble. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding it interesting that the guy that did it was John Haldeman. Halderman said the protection could be also be disabled by stopping the driver the CD installs when it is first inserted into the computer's drive. So computers running Linux and older versions of the Mac operating system are unable to run the software and are able to copy the disk freely, he said.
See, they're just going to have to outlaw Linux because it's causing all the problems.
It's
a theme throughout all of this. Linux is always at the root of it.
But I found that story very interesting, that something that was supposed to be hailed as a terrific technology is that simple to defeat.
Well, it's not the first time. What do you got, the new money?
Yeah, I got the new money, too.
New money? What's going on with this?
Tomorrow, I understand the new $20 bills are scheduled to be rolled out, and there are all kinds of new features.
Didn't we just get new $20 bills?
1996.
Well,
we talked about it then.
Not too long ago. I mean, why are we getting more new $20 bills?
These are super strength 20s.
Super strength? What,
yes.
They have plastic?
More absorbent?
Exactly. But they do have the same, you know, color shifting ink, and the security thread is back.
Now, this is something that's actually going to have a different color.
Colors, like the European money,
for
yes.
For the first time.
Exactly.
So, what, are we going to have pink money, or how's it going to look?
Well, this is actually kind of a range. It goes from a nice blue to a pink, to the green.
From this angle, it still looks green to me.
Here, look at it there.
Okay, some shades, but still, overall, it looks green.
True. But it does, I mean, the Eagle's blue,
mm-hmm.
and it is going to be a change. They've gotten rid of the a little frame that goes around Andrew Jackson as well.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. I guess. It's only 20s. It's not 50s, 100s.
No, just the 20.
Okay. For now.
Interesting.
So,
well, okay, I'll be looking for... Actually, you know, the $2 bill... I have a $2 bill at home that has a little red circle in it. You know, that little circle that indicates, I think, where it was printed?
The mint, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes they're red.
I'll explain that to you sometime, unless you want now.
Well, explain it now, if you can keep it under a minute.
There used to be three sorts of money in the United States. There were silver certificates. You could go to the Treasury up until 1973 and turn it into actual silver. There were Federal Reserve notes, which were backed by the Federal Reserve system issued by them. And then there were what were known as U.S. notes. This was old-style money. This was backed up directly by the U.S. government. Those are the ones with the red seal. Silver certificates had the blue seal, and the green seal, Federal Reserve notes.
Okay, well, that explains that. And I also have it on a $2 bill, so I guess that makes it even more rare. What's that?
This is the case against Bono.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was something.
Talk about that, huh?
That was something. It was a real surprise. Yeah, in case you guys didn't hear about this, the singer from U2 uttered an expletive. He uttered the F-word during an award ceremony in January. Now, this triggered a response by some crazy parents group that is outraged every time they hear something that they disapprove of. And they wrote to the FCC en masse, and I think that might have been their undoing because they all represented the same group and they were the vast majority of the people who complained about this. Now, they actually thought that the FCC was going to take action against the person who said this, even though the person himself wasn't broadcasting from a radio station. He was at an award ceremony. I mean, think about that for one thing. You know, think about if you just speak like you normally speak, being prosecuted because what you said went over the airwaves. That's insane right there. But the FCC actually said something, which I think almost makes up for all the other stuff they've been doing lately. They said that that kind of remark is perfectly acceptable. Using the F word is okay if it's not used in a sexual or excretory manner. And, you know, maybe this is going to actually bring us up to where the rest of the world is as far as these things go. You know, where I can watch the Osbournes on my Canadian satellite dish, and they don't have all the little bleeps in it. Did you even know that they make that show without the bleeps? It's really cool. I mean, you know, I don't need to hear those words, but I'm kind of sick of having everything cut for me to protect my ears. Anyway, the FCC rejected complaints from the Parents Television Council and more than 200 people, most of them associated with that council, who accused dozens of television stations of violating restrictions on obscene broadcasts by airing portions of the awards program last January. The complaints uttered the phrase, "This is really, really effing brilliant." The FCC, according to this Associated Press dispatch, used the F word more often to explain its decision than Bono did on the air. Said the word may be crude and offensive, but in the context presented here, did not describe sexual or excretory organs or activities. That distinction is a key test to measure whether a statement meets a federal standard for broadcast indecency. Okay, you know, maybe now we can, like, resume where things were back in the 70s, I think, when all this nonsense started, and stop being so paranoid and worried about things. You know, they air The Sopranos over broadcast TV in most of the world. And even on cable, we have to restrict things and make second versions so that you don't hear certain words or see certain sights. So
and really, you watch the Osbournes?
Yeah, I can see it. It's aired in Canada over the air too, not just on cable, but broadcast.
But you really watch it?
Well, I just was passing by, and I'd never actually seen it. I saw a little bit of it once, and I thought it was kind of funny. Then I saw it, and like, wow, all these bleeps aren't there, and no one knew what I was talking about because most people I see on a day-to-day basis live here. So that's a significant development for us broadcasters, and that's something that I think you'll be hearing more follow-up to, definitely. But something that everybody's talking about right now is...
I'm still not going to use the word, by the way.
Well, no, I mean, here's the thing. You have standards as broadcasters, and for instance, in this particular radio show, it doesn't really fit in. You know, using obscenities and four-letter words isn't really necessary for what we do. However, if you have a dramatic reading or something like that, or you're speaking with people who are you know, in the middle of something really you know, emotionally distressful, you want to focus on the subject matter and not on, well, is that word allowed? You know, because people who are listening at that particular moment to that kind of a thing have probably heard the word already, and you know, that's not what's going to upset them. The story that the person is telling might upset them, and that's, you know, that's why we're here. Anyway, so the telemarketing thing, that's what everybody is all up in arms about right now. Apparently, the Do Not Call list is in operation right now. All right, so it does work. I would go to the telemarketing part of the website. However, someone took our advice last week. Last week we had the monitor, we had the keyboard. Someone had just taken the computer. I expressed the question, well, why even keep that here? If it's not going to be connected to anything, and that's gone now. So we have wires coming out of the wall, and unless someone can figure out how to tap into those, I can't really see if there's anything different on the telemarketing donotcall.gov, I believe is the site.
Did you hear about the follow-up article that Dave Barry wrote?
I have that.
Okay, good, good.
Dave Barry, yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. Dave Barry is a columnist
the Miami Tribune, I think it is.
Something like that, yeah. And he wrote a couple of pieces about telemarketers.
But the most response that he'd gotten was about the do not call.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll read you this paragraph, or a couple of words that he wrote. He says, I received approximately 7 billion phone calls, letters, and emails on this topic. Might be a slight exaggeration there. About 99% came from consumers who are wildly enthusiastic about the idea of calling telemarketers. Yes, that's right. He told people how to call them back. Many of these consumers wanted me to publish more telemarketers' numbers, including residential numbers. As one emailer put it, I think we should call them at home and try to sell them the idea of not calling people at home. The other 1% of the response came from people in the telemarketing industry who pointed out that I am evil vermin scum and, even worse, a member of the news media. Their main arguments are that telemarketers are hardworking people, and if they're not allowed to call people who don't want to be called, telemarketing jobs would be lost, and the U.S. economy would suffer. Tim Searcy of the ATA, I believe that's the American Telemarketing Association or something like that, American Teleservices Association. He was quoted in the Los Angeles Times as saying that the impact of the Do Not Call registry would be, and I did not make this quote up, like an asteroid hitting the Earth. Yes, an asteroid. As I write these words, lawyers and politicians and lobbyists and judges are swarming all over the telemarketing issue, so I won't know what the legal status of the Do Not Call registry will be when you read this column, but it appears that the telemarketers plan to continue their efforts to save the planet by fighting for the right to call people who do not want to be called. I realize that this makes many of you angry. I realize that many of you would like to once again let the telemarketers know how you feel. And I am frankly tempted to reveal to you here that the American Teleservices Association, which is at www.ataconnect.org, seems to have a phone line working, at least for now, at 317-816-9336. But would it be right to reveal this? I mean, yes, you could call the ATA again, but the ATA surely doesn't want you to call again. It's inconvenient. And to insist on calling somebody who doesn't want to be called, even if you have the legal right to call, well, that's just plain rude. So I'm taking the high road and not revealing that information.
Wait till dinner time before you call.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that number was in there. Did you hear that? Did you hear me say the number? I did. I was sort of spacing when I was talking just now. But
we have
I
a phone.
Okay, well, let's get a dial tone there. Oh, there it is. Okay, let's give him a call.
Did you think I was grabbing the phone for nothing?
I don't know. 317-816-9336. I hope this is them and not, some grandmother or someplace. Okay, that's a cue for our special code. Probably going to be busy. It's not busy. They have multiple phone lines.
We'll probably leave a message.
Why? You don't think someone's going to pick up? You're such a pessimist. I mean, maybe... What are we going to try to sell them?
Thank you for calling the American Teleservices Association. Your call is important to us.
Ooh.
If you are an ATA member calling with specific issues or questions, please leave a message after the tone. Please be aware that the ATA does not maintain a Do Not Call list. Federal law prohibits us from placing anyone on the federal Do Not Call registry. The Telephone Consumer Protection Act of 1991 restricts telemarketers from calling residential numbers unless the telemarketer has instituted written policies and procedures for maintaining a company Do Not Call list for consumers who request not to receive further solicitations from that company. The ATA supported the Telephone Consumer Protection Act at its inception and continues to do so today. If you are receiving unwanted telemarketing calls, request that the caller place your name on the company's Do Not Call list. Under existing law, the telemarketer must stop calling or face fines. If you are calling with comments regarding the federal Do Not Call registry, please press 110 now. Thank you again for your call.
110, that's a strange thing to press.
Well,
see what happens if you don't press anything. Maybe you'll get a live operator. It's possible.
Hi, you've reached the voicemail of Brad Rutite. Please leave a detailed message, and when leaving your phone number, please leave it slowly. Thank you.
Oh, gee. Brad, we're just calling because we had a special offer for you, but what we'll do is we'll call you back, and we'll call at your house. Yeah, see ya. Ah, Brad's going to be upset now. Wow, that's kind of strange. Okay, well, that's what happens if you call the telemarketers. And yeah, I think it's great giving out the phone numbers for the telemarketers. I mean, what do they expect? You know?
Yeah, don't give it out again.
Why would I do that?
Okay.
People can listen on the internet and they can play it back as many times as they want.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take phone calls ourselves, phone calls that we're soliciting. 212-209-2900. And I know a lot of people from out of the area try to call and they don't get through. And they're upset by that because, well, they get cut off because the long-distance company doesn't allow them to stay on for a long period of time. So keep trying. That's all I can say about that. Virus writers are being probed for ties to terrorist organizations. Have you heard this one? Britain's Task Force Against High-Tech Crime is investigating links between virus writers and extremist groups as it prepares defenses for a possible attack. The National High-Tech Crime Unit, NHTCU, has started working with antivirus firms to identify patterns in the source code of the most damaging internet worms and virus programs to determine whether they are the work of organized subversive groups or crime syndicates. The hope is that buried somewhere in the lines of code will be clues to the author's identity, motive, and possibly future acts of sabotage. So, yeah, Al-Qaeda and their viruses and worms will be the next thing to be looking out for.
You shouldn't say that. People will start to take it seriously.
Well, it was on CNN, so, you know, I think people already take it seriously. Okay, the van that everybody was flipping out about last week, the Homeland Security van. Mike, maybe you can explain this as far as that van showed up someplace else.
Yeah, so if you go to the Infralinks website, which you can get to by going to Google and typing Infralynx.
The site isn't on top of the page now?
Yeah, it is, but it's long and I don't want to read it all. If you email us, we'll reply with the whole URL. There's some photographs on the Infralinks website from the 2002 IMF World Bank Conference when the Infralinks was used against American citizen and, you know, other protesters. It provided an extension of the Metropolitan Police Department's private network between the Joint Operations Command Center and the Forward Deployed Command Center, whatever that means.
So now they've actually used this thing at demonstrations? Is that
at demonstrations.
Okay. And
nonviolent demonstrations.
What did it do? What did that truck actually do?
I just read it. I didn't understand.
Okay. Well,
it probably allowed them to communicate.
Mm-hmm. With who? About what?
All right. I'm sorry. It defended the homeland.
Okay, whatever. all right, more news, and we'll take phone calls, 212-209-2900. We do have open lines, by the way, so if you think you can't get through, you're wrong. You can. A three-year-old law that requires federal prisoners and parolees to give blood samples to the FBI's DNA database was declared unconstitutional Thursday by a federal appeals court. A three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that requiring the blood samples amounts to an illegal invasion of privacy because they are taken without legal suspicion that the convicts were involved in other crimes. The court said it is a violation of inmates' Fourth Amendment rights against illegal searches. The samples constitute suspicionless searches with the objective of furthering law enforcement purposes, according to Judge Stephen Reinhardt. So the San Francisco-based 9th Circuit, as many of us know, is the most liberal and overturned federal appeals court in the country. They're the Pledge of Allegiance Court, the ones that that said the Pledge of Allegiance was unconstitutional in public schools. And they also issued the decision last month that postponed California's recall election. We know how successful that was. So they look for this law to be back in force pretty soon. All right, take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air. All right, not with noises like that, you're not going to be on the air for very long. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I drove.
Not with voices like that, you won't be on for very long. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings.
How you doing?
Man, I like your show, man. You're definitely off the hook.
Well,
no doubt about it.
That's a compliment, I hope.
No, man, it is. I mean, you know, even if you have some negative people talking about the thing, you're still up to date with the technology.
As long as I'm not off the chain, that's all.
Yeah, I'm on.
All right, good.
True. What am I calling about? Because I'm really concerned, because I didn't get a cellular phone yet, but I've been looking or examining what... You know, the things dealing with cellular phones. You just talk about a thing a while ago about the phone exploding. You know more about that in more detail?
Well, just what we read as far as the lithium battery apparently got either shorted or overheated or something like that. I guess it's something that can happen to any device that has a battery of that sort in it.
Now, was that person, did they have a plug in the ear, or did they have it just laying down on the seat itself, or what?
They claim it was the phone was just on the seat, minding its own business, not even in use, not even being charged.
Yeah.
It's, you know, admittedly, it's a pretty rare thing. It's
come on. But, I'm just concerned. I'm just saying, because some people do carry their cell phone,
uh-huh.
you know, in the cars, and you may put it down on the dashing board or things like that. And
I would avoid putting your phone in a hot car that, leaving it unattended like you would a dog.
Say.
Or, no, wait a minute. That came out totally wrong.
No, We know what you're saying.
Right,
this is no problem, man. You all are always... it's always jovial. Let me understand where you're coming from.
Right.
See? Now, another thing also, how do one get in contact with y'all? Because I've got to come down to the station there. You talk so fast in terms of the email and all that stuff. Like, how to shut all this stuff down?
I can talk slower. I mean, you have email access, right?
Oh, man. Well, I may have an email, but right now we don't have a computer. But I mean, just listening to them, we go to my friends, see?
Okay, well, I'll give the email address anyway, and I'm sure you can figure out how to get sent through the ether. OTH, which stands for off the hook,
mm-hmm.
At 2600-2600.com.
2600. 2600. .com.
And that's it.
Yeah, man. Why y'all don't have it with org?
What? Oh, you can do that, too. .org works. We just grabbed everything so that somebody else wouldn't grab it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like we were saying before, when I have a chance to listen to your program, you're definitely up to date.
Okay.
So, we appreciate, the information you're giving out.
Well, thanks so much for your call.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Blessed to the crew there.
All right. Take care.
Yeah, man.
All right. Up to date. Maybe we should call our show Up to Date. I think that might be a better name for it. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, man, I just want to say from my Jamaican place.
You're not fooling anybody. wasting your vocal cords. Good evening, you're on the air. Better thought out that one. Good evening, you're on the air. Okay. Good evening, you're on the air. You see, one person is capable of causing all this havoc. Yeah, okay, you did okay a couple
for
weeks
a while,
ago,
yeah.
Until you got greedy.
I'm sorry.
So, wait, give it a second to replenish, all right? 212-209-2900, you sort of have to, flush the rebel out of the phone system, and all right. And if you call us and you get disconnected because your long distance company isn't making any money after the phone rings five times, just call back. You'll get through eventually because we're not letting the people that tie up the phone lines in. All right, 212-209-2900. Pick one, Jeff.
All right, I got this one.
All right, and good evening. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
We're good.
Okay, question.
Yes.
We can ask questions in regards to telephone service.
Absolutely.
I've been speaking to a number of people, and they've experienced this. The telephone rings when, after they get finished speaking on the telephone, it may ring one or twice, and then there's nobody there. If they're on the telephone and they're speaking for quite some time, when they finish their conversation, the phone may ring again. And in fact, one party I know, the person actually spoke and cursed them out for using their phone. Now, this party has taken the telephone company to court. They're in court now in regards to they feel that someone is on the line. Now, is it, I know it's possible, but have you had anyone voice their dissatisfaction with services with, I guess, the various telephone companies? Maybe perhaps those who are there manding the lines, they have access to your line when it's not being used by yourself and may either connect someone that they know so that they'll be able to use your line?
Well, one thing that we have seen over the years is various phone company people who are able to tap into your phone line, for instance, if they're working on a line down the street, on the telephone pole, they're able to just attach their little set to the wire. And they do this all the time. They make phone calls on other people's lines. Usually it's local calls or calls to a toll-free number or something like that. And I've gotten calls, in fact, at my house, and I see the number is coming from one of my neighbors. And it's not my neighbor calling me. It's the phone guy calling me, asking if I'm home because he wants to come to my house next and do something there. So it's possible. I mean, if you think your phone is being used in a way that you don't want it to be used, that someone is simply tapping in and doing something like that. In fact, that can happen. That can happen with anybody because phone wires are exposed in so many different places. I've known people who live in apartment buildings where inside their closet is basically you, Jim. What you want?
That was our old apartment where we had. I think it was 300 apartments worth of telephone lines in our closet.
In your closet. So you could just basically tap into anyone's phone line.
I won't say what happened, but it was interesting.
I wasn't implying that. Now I'm beginning to wonder. But, okay, but you could basically say, theoretically, call 900 numbers, make obscene phone calls, harass people, do all accept collect calls from other people. Yeah, all kinds of things like that are certainly possible. Oh, yeah. Phone systems are notoriously insecure, so it's important that people realize that. There's just simply wires. Anybody can intercept those wires. Thanks for that call and for provoking that interesting discussion. Good evening. I'm sorry. You're supposed to press the button. Okay, good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Let me turn the radio down.
Yes.
Hi. Do you have a way or know about tracking the emissions from cell phones to help me choose the safest phone? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm pretty sure there are websites that do that kind of a thing. I used to subscribe to a newsletter called Microwave News that talked about that kind of thing. You know anything, Mike? Mike, you look like you know something. Sorry.
If you read the specifications for the cell phones, a lot of times it is hidden in there.
So each just pick out a model and it'll list the emissions rate?
Often, yes.
The other thing you can do, too, is just use a hands-free set and you're not putting the thing next to your head, which is a lot safer.
So any hands-free set makes it much, much safer.
I would, you know, you're
I've
not...
I've heard that in Europe they care about this and that the phones don't have high emissions. And
well, they certainly use phones a lot more than we do, wireless phones. They use them a lot more over there, so I don't know. They also smoke a lot, so it's kind of hard to say if they really, you know, care about that kind of thing. Leo, you're from Europe, so tell us.
Well, I left before they had cell phones, but you can just call the company up and ask, the cell phone company, and ask about which models release the least amount of radiation.
Do you really think they'll be honest?
No, but it's worth a try.
Yeah, if you want to laugh about what they tell you. But, look on the Internet, too. You know, plug it into a search engine, and I'm sure you'll find sites that talk about this kind of thing.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Jeff, you pick this one.
All right.
Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Yes.
Two things. One in response to the last call, and one in response to the call before it. The one before it, the woman about when they hang up the phone, getting the rings. In the little brochure that we get with our bills, I think you told us last week it's called Extra, maybe?
Yes.
Anyway, this one we just got or the one before it, it was like a reminder. They were saying to us, the patrons, when you hang up your phone, do not make a call right away. Let it wait. I think 3 seconds or 10 seconds, I don't really remember, because it interferes with their three-way calling.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because what Verizon has done repeatedly in many places is given people three-way against their will, and then they charge these people for using the three-way function on a call-by-call basis. So you basically get charged, I think, 75 cents every time you use three-way if you don't already subscribe to it, and they stick it on your line without you asking for it. So it's really annoying. It's really frustrating, and you have to ask them to take it off your line and refuse to pay any charges that result from them putting it on your line. And that happens if you hang up your phone and pick it up quickly. Yes, you'll hear the pulsating dial tone, which means that you've gotten three-way. Even if the other person hangs up, it still counts as a three-way call because you didn't wait 3 seconds. It's ridiculous.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a real scam.
But yeah, and the other thing I wanted to say in regard to this, the call about the cellular phone. Kathy Davis and Bob Lederer, I forgot the name, Health Styles, or so, whatever their show is, maybe the woman has heard the show, and they've done a lot of shows about cellular phones.
That's right.
Of course, they're totally against using them, and I myself don't have one and never have, but I just thought I'd bring that up because from Kathy and Bob, perhaps they have some kind of way of getting the information she's looking for.
Yes, look to this radio station, too. I don't know the exact day and time that show is on, but look at our website, WBAI.org, and find out. And I'm sure they would have a lot more information on those specifics.
Okay, thanks, Emmanuel.
Okay, take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Bye-bye.
And let's take another phone call, 212-209-2900.
And who says that women don't get represented on our show? That was the last three calls.
Good evening. You're on the air.
I am wondering, I've heard a lot about something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Oh,
what is that?
Oh, that's nothing but trouble. It really, it's legislation that was passed a few years ago. Well, that person, I guess, didn't stick around to hear
it. 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Its anniversary is coming up.
Well, we'll have to do something special, won't we? yeah, something that will result in litigation for sure. It basically prevents you from doing all kinds of things with technology, using it in ways that it was not intended, or reverse engineering or figuring things out. It's awful. It's something that needs to be taken back, and it's a very bad piece of legislation. It came from the Clinton administration, didn't it?
Passed unanimously overnight.
Mm-hmm.
By Congress.
Here's a letter from somebody, Jeff from Manhattan. Well, we have two Jeffs in the room. I'm wondering, you're not from Manhattan. I do not want three-way calling on my phone. I am in Brooklyn. Well, it says right there, Jeff from Manhattan, so... Okay, I'm in Brooklyn.
He's from Manhattan and moved to Brooklyn.
Well, it's a two-line letter, and he's already confused me. I am in Brooklyn, and when I called Verizon, they said there's no way for us to turn it off. I thought that was an extra feature. Do you know anything about this? I'm Jeff from Manhattan. Well, Jeff, from wherever you are, what we just discussed now, they are putting this on phone lines, I imagine, in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and of course they can turn it off. They can absolutely turn it off, and... They're keeping it on so they can charge you every time you accidentally use it. Another letter that we got from David from Arlington, Virginia. I tried to call in, but I keep getting cut off. Maybe because I'm calling from Virginia and I'm using long distance. It happens. Just keep trying. What I wanted to comment on was that when I was in New York City recently, I was crossing a bridge called the White Stone. Some of you may have heard of this bridge.
Yeah.
Yes. It's real. I've seen it. I noticed a sign that said, use of cameras prohibited, strictly enforced. I was on a bus crossing this bridge, and I was wondering how they can enforce this if, one, you're on a bus, or two, if you're using a cell phone that has a camera on it. One can just be talking on the phone and really taking a picture. Is the bridge copyrighted? On one of your shows, you said some city skylines are copyrighted. I live in Arlington, Virginia. There was a sign at the Pentagon with a camera and a red slash through it. I saw many people talking on cell phones there. Signed, David from Arlington. Well, you know... One thing that really annoys me when they come up with such regulations like this, saying you're not allowed to take pictures of something that's part of the public landscape, I would call on as many people as possible to take pictures of all the bridges around here and send them to us. And you know what? We'll make a website just of pictures of the Whitestone Bridge, the Throgs Neck Bridge. Should we include the Queensborough Bridge? I don't know.
Yeah.
Would that be a public service? All right. And, of course, the Verrazano Bridge, because that's a nice bridge.
Only Manhattan bridges?
Well, we're local, you know. If we expanded the bridges all over the world, the ones that have those signs on it, how about that?
Okay.
A bridge that has a sign saying, you cannot take a picture of this bridge. We want pictures of that bridge. Jim.
Having formerly worked for a major semi-governmental agency, in the New York City subways, you're not allowed to take pictures. But the reason is that, yes, it is copyrighted. You cannot use the design elements. You cannot make money off of it. If you want to take it for your own private use, that's fine.
How do they tell the difference?
Well, essentially, they have people, like, find stuff in magazines and whatever and discover if they've asked for a permit to take the photo.
Really? Because we've taken pictures in the subway system.
Have you used it for commercial purposes?
Well, one of our covers was from a subway station.
Yeah,
that?
That's a maybe.
When the subway sign got hacked?
That's a maybe.
I guess they were so upset about that they...
That was news, actually.
They forgot about the picture.
I would say that's news.
Yes, Leo?
Before we sign off, I want to ask if next week we're going to have a show, because it's fundraising, isn't it?
Well,
team?
Why don't you ask me that after the show? But
because if we're not, we should announce.
No, we would announce it. We always announce when we're not on the air. And we announce that here on the radio show.
We do it live when we're not on the air.
Yes. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead. That was not a good choice, Jeff. Try again.
But at least.
I think you're losing your touch.
It wasn't Rebel.
That's right.
It could have been.
It could have been worse.
He could have left. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Good afternoon. Good night.
Yeah, whatever. It's
fine.
It's night somewhere. Go ahead.
I wanted to install Linux. I initially installed it onto a new computer. And when I tried to plug in the drivers for the monitor, the monitor went monochrome.
This sounds like a question for the personal computer show, which comes on right after us. Do you want to call them and get more specific information?
Oh, I'm sorry. I told you what.
No, we're the hacker show.
Oh, okay.
But at 8 o'clock, the personal computer show comes on. They have all kinds of information like that, so
that's
suggest listening.
Good. Thank you
all
very
right.
much.
212-209-2900. Actually, I guess we don't have time to take new calls, but let's take some of the ones we have here.
All right.
And good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, everybody says that hackers are bad, and I'm wondering why it is you guys think that hackers are good.
You know, this is the same person that called about the DMCA, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, you're asking a lot of simple questions tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, because I'm afraid your audience doesn't understand some of these things.
Well, hackers are basically explorers. They're people that ask a lot of questions and play with technology. And unlike the articles that we've read from, they're and the definitions from Merriam-Webster, they're not people that engage in destruction or criminal behavior. They're, if you come to one of our meetings, you'll see that they're basically a lot of curious people that just want to share information and learn things.
When you, that's great.
When you were younger,
we'd like to think.
When you were younger, did you build models?
Absolutely.
Did you follow the instructions?
Oh, I did. No, I never.
Okay, well, you're a hacker. You hacked the model.
That's right, and you probably violated Digital Millennium Copyright Act when doing so. Thanks for your call. Steve, we can get another one in.
Okay.
And good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I had a question about VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol.
Okay.
Have any of you experienced or used that particular service?
I think a lot of us wind up using it without knowing we're using it. Sometimes you connect to things and you're actually going over the net instead of through wires and things like that. It's technology that's gotten a lot better in recent years, I'll tell you that. And that's what enables phone calls to become incredibly cheap, like a penny or 2 pennies a minute.
Oh, because I have recently subscribed to Vonage.
Yeah, now we're looking for reviews about Vonage because a lot of people are using that. That's the service where you can get area codes and from different cities. Like you could have a California phone number here in New York City, which is kind of neat, I guess. I don't know what happens when you call the police, who you get, but I guess we'll figure that out. But have you ever used, how long have you been using it for?
Oh, I just like a week, actually. But in using the service, there's like a 4-second delay, actually.
4-second delay?
Yeah.
Like
a 4-second delay. If I were to say your name, Emmanuel, 4 seconds you would like hear it, actually.
But that must make conversations a little bit difficult.
Are you using it now?
No, not at the moment, no.
I wish you were, actually. I'd like to experiment with that. That might be a rarity because you really can't sell any kind of phone service based on 4-second delays.
It is like a delay, actually. Like an echo, like using a cell phone.
Well, there's always a delay on cell phones because the processing isn't fast enough. Hopefully, it'll go away someday. But on satellites, unless we break the speed of light, I don't see how using a satellite you'll be able to go any faster. And that's a significant delay. Where were you calling to at the time?
Our local number, actually.
It was local. I don't know. I need to use the service a little bit and play around with it.
And I was on the internet as well.
Uh-huh.
And it slows down your bandwidth, actually. If you're on the phone and using the net as well.
Interesting. Yeah, because you do have to have a net connection in order to use this.
You need a DSL connection.
Or a cable modem or something like that. Well, we'll definitely talk about this more in weeks to come. So thanks for the info. If anyone there is using Vonage, please let us know, because we certainly like to know more about it. That's it for us tonight. We're out of time. Boy, time sure goes fast, doesn't it? And we will be back next week. Leo will be here. if we're not here, we'll let you know. And you can write to us, oth@2600.com, or tune in next week. See you later. Good night.
For over 500,000 young people every weekend, a good night out is breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law.
out there. You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Stay tuned for the award-winning Personal Computer Show coming up right after this message.
The Archivist Roundtable of Metropolitan New York presents the Family History Fair, which takes place this Sunday, October 12th, from 12 noon to 5 p.m. at the Graduate Center, City University of New York, located at 34th Street and 5th Avenue in Manhattan. It's a day of workshops for aficionados of genealogy, family tree research, and community history of cultures around the world. That's Sunday, October 12th, 12 noon to 5 p.m. The Graduate Center, City University of New York, 34th Street and 5th Avenue in Manhattan. For more information, call 212-415-5547. That's 212-415-5547.